This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you could have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases. The time is now more than ever to embrace the breathtaking, sinister, and shocking tales that can enthrall you, especially with brand new exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors who are guaranteed to keep you gripped, like Amy Tintera's Listen for the Lie. With exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors, captivating sound design, and dynamic performances, Audible brings these stories to life like never before. And as a member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
I'm Margaret Brennan, and this week on Face the Nation, Washington is still reeling from Wednesday's deadly siege at the Capitol, and America is on edge as the clock ticks down on the last days of the Trump administration. The scenes of violence and destruction are still horrifying, made even more disturbing by where and when the rioters waged their war last week.
An unprecedented assault on our democracy. An assault, literally, on the citadel of liberty in the United States Capitol itself.
Five lives, including a Capitol police officer, were lost as a result of this national disgrace. Questions about poor preparation for an event advertised by President Trump as wild, and the disastrous response from law enforcement continue to grow. A mob of Mr. Trump's followers were incited by the president himself to try and overturn the election by disrupting the certification of electoral votes.
We're going to the Capitol, and if you don't fight like hell, you're not going to have a country anymore.
They failed. Democracy succeeded. Another challenge? Punishment, or at least accountability for actions. Across the country, law enforcement is working to round up the extremists. Nearly 100 have been charged so far. As for Mr. Trump, congressional Democrats and some Republicans say his actions are reprehensible.
Well, I think the best way for our country, Chuck, is for the president to resign and go away as soon as possible.
We'll cover it all with two key senators, Missouri Republican Roy Blunt and Delaware Democrat Chris Coons. D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser and former head of cybersecurity for the Trump administration, Chris Krebs. Then, a look at the devastating surge of COVID-19 and more on that new strain of the virus. Former FDA Commissioner Dr. Scott Gottlieb will be with us. And finally, it wouldn't be a major Washington political story without the legendary Bob Schieffer. He and John Dickerson will both be with us today. It's all just ahead on Face the Nation. Good morning and welcome to Face the Nation. It's a quiet Sunday here in the nation's capital, but the next 10 days promise to be anything but as we get closer to Inauguration Day. One reason it's quiet, the president's Twitter account has been silenced forever. President Trump remains at the White House, and there is apprehension about what he might do next. He has not spoken to Vice President Pence, who is still being given the silent treatment following Mr. Trump's attacks on him for not sabotaging the electoral vote process. That stinging rebuke of his loyal follower has upset even close allies of the president. We are told the president himself has privately acknowledged that Mr. Pence got a bad deal, but he has not publicly condemned those who stormed the Capitol chanting, "Hang Mike Pence."
Hang Mike Pence!
high-ranking officials discussed invoking the 25th Amendment, where the president would be removed by a vote from his cabinet. That option still exists, but as of now, no proposal has been submitted to the vice president. The president refuses to resign, and he plans to travel this week to highlight his work at the border. An article of impeachment will be introduced in the House tomorrow, and Speaker Nancy Pelosi has asked Congress to prepare to return to Washington. 60 Minutes correspondent Leslie Stahl sat down with the Speaker Friday. We begin with a preview from tonight's broadcast.
What if he pardons himself?
What if he pardons these people who are terrorists on the Capitol?
Or pardons himself?
He can only pardon himself from federal offenses. He cannot pardon himself from state offenses, and that's where he's being investigated in the state of New York.
There is a possibility that after all of this, there's no punishment, no consequence, and he could run again for president.
And that's one of the motivations that people have for advocating for impeachment.
Won't that take more than the 10 days? I mean, does it actually make sense?
Well, I like the 25th Amendment because it gets rid of him. He's out of office. But there is strong support in the Congress for impeaching the president a second time.
More of Leslie Stahl's interview will air tonight on 60 Minutes. We want to go now to Missouri Republican Senator Roy Blunt. He is the head of the Congressional Committee overseeing the inauguration and the outgoing chairman of one of the two committees investigating what went wrong with security last Wednesday. Good morning to you, Senator.
Good morning, Margaret.
Senator, we have received sad news this morning from Capitol Hill Police that another officer has died. It's described as an off-duty death. Do you know if there's any connection to the events of this week?
You know, I don't know. Officer Sisnick, now Officer Liebengood, both their lives were ended this week. I'll be interested in finding out if there was a connection with Officer Liebengood, but mostly I'm interested in reaching out to both of their families. These are people we saw every day, particularly Officer Liebengood, who was very much assigned to the Senate side of the building. And, you know, you have that loss, you have four other deaths of people who got involved in something that they absolutely should not have gotten involved in. And it was a tragedy, even if it had been limited just to that. Mm-hmm. But then when you see this all over the world, citizens of the United States storming the Capitol of the United States, certainly something I thought I would never see. And I'm glad we got back into the Capitol and got our work done that day where we were supposed to get it done to send that signal. But the signal around the world couldn't have been more helpful to our adversaries than it was. It was a sad and terrible day in the history of the country.
I think we agree with you on that, sir. I appreciate your kind words about these particular officers. I have to ask you, though, about some of the images that have been projected around the world as well, which are of some of those officers appearing to remove barriers for rioters to allow them in. There are reports that some actually gave information on where to find certain congressional offices. Is there any indication of involvement or complicity from members of the Capitol Police?
No. And I resent any sense that the Capitol Police didn't push back, fight back, valiantly get out there and stand between first the building and then the people in the building that they're there to protect. Now, Senator Klobuchar and I have announced we're going to look into this, both the planning and whether the support was imminent. Certainly, the support from the D.C. police was quick and incredibly helpful. I know the mayor's coming on later today. They were here. Mm-hmm. They were here almost immediately when asked to be. I think we have to think about why the National Guard didn't get here quicker. But the Capitol Police fought back. You can do anything with looking at film, not knowing what you're talking about. I do know when you're overwhelmed in law enforcement, one of the things you do is try to step back and regroup rather than let yourself get surrounded. Senator Coons is on later. He and I formed the law enforcement caucus when we came to the Senate 10 years ago. We see these officers often. We reach out more than most members do to them. They are put their lives on the line every day, particularly last Wednesday, and I deeply resent any suggestion that these officers didn't do everything they could do.
Two Republican senators have now called for the president to resign. Should he?
Well, it would be up to him, but my view would be what the president should do is now finish the last 10 days of his presidency.
So no.
No.
Your fellow Republicans have been quite critical, including Liz Cheney, including Mitt Romney, who called this an insurrection and said that the president was directly involved. Justice Department affidavits have individuals saying they came here because the president told them to. Is the president a danger to the country?
Well, I think the president's decisions and his actions that day and leading up to that day on this topic were clearly reckless. I said that very early in the evening on Wednesday, that this was a tragic day for the country, and the president had involvement in that.
Are Republican leaders going to hold him accountable in any way for it?
Well, I think the country is the right way to hold presidents accountable. The president should be very careful over the next 10 days that his behavior is what you'd expect from a leader of the greatest country in the world. Now, my personal view is that the president touched the hot stove on Wednesday and is unlikely to touch it again. And if that's the case, I think we get every day we get closer to the last day of his presidency. We should be thinking more about the first day of the next presidency than the last day of his presidency, in my view. And I'll be there on that day as the chairman of that event, seeing the new president sworn in. The President Trump says he's not coming. I hope Vice President Pence does. And I was proud to see the vice president step up as I was standing there right with him as one of the four members of Congress that count those electoral ballots and do what the law required us to do.
Right. But your fellow Missouri Senator Josh Hawley was on the other side of that. Do you think that he was complicit along with the five other senators who continue to propagate this lie that there could be a change to the outcome of the election on Wednesday?
Well, I only have one vote in the Senate, which is my vote. Now, I did the day Senator Hawley announced he'd be contesting those electoral votes, announced that I would not be. When Senator Cruz said he had a plan to put back in place a commission like the one formed in 1877, right. I said that wouldn't happen. I wasn't interested then or now in spending a lot of time on things that can't happen.
So no
sanction. Just like the impeachment of the president to remove him from office, clearly is not going to happen between now and the last day he's in office.
So you don't believe he has committed an impeachable offense?
I don't think there's any. That's not really the question. The question
is my question.
I'm giving you my answer. Is there any likelihood that he could possibly be removed between now and January the 20th? And if there's no additional ensuing event, my belief is there is no possibility of that. And so as Nancy Pelosi just said, and as Jim Clyburn said earlier today, this is more of a long-term punishment of the president than trying to remove him from office.
That's right.
When the politics take over and the protecting the government is left behind.
All right. We'll see if you have a different answer in the new Congress, sir. Thank you for your time this morning. We turn now to the mayor of Washington, D.C., Muriel Bowser. Madam Mayor, thank you for joining us this morning. I know you have put this city under public emergency until the day after inauguration. There are about 6,000 National Guard troops who will be here. Those members, some of them will be armed. Do you think the city is prepared now for what's about to come?
Well, I will tell you that given the events of last week, that this inauguration preparation has to be different than any other inauguration with only 10 days to go. Today, I'm requesting from the department, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, that they take additional steps, including expanding the length of time that this national special security event is in place. Which is we're asking it to be extended from January 19th back to January the 11th. Further, I am asking that they extend the perimeter of their coverage area for this national security special event, which is the inauguration, to include the Capitol. Later today, I'm going to send a letter to the President of the United States asking that he declare a pre-emergency declaration for the District of Columbia that will allow for further federal coordination.
There were pipe bombs that were discovered in Washington at the Democratic National Committee and at the Republican National Committee. Who planted them? What do you know?
I know that the FBI is investigating that, and we should take it very seriously. I think what we have seen is real domestic terrorism in our nation's capital, and that's what we need to call it. Who we saw charging the Capitol building were trained people in many cases, former military, former law enforcement. And I think we may find other trained people trained at marching and surging and sieging buildings. So we have to take it seriously. Mm-hmm. We too have to take seriously how we're spreading our resources. That's why we're very focused on making sure that the federal government is providing enough coverage for federal facilities, including the Capitol, but many federal buildings across the district, so that other law enforcement, our law enforcement, can focus on other threats across the district's 8 wards.
Okay. Madam Mayor, there's a lot of finger pointing, as you know, about exactly how this happened on Wednesday. Back on January 5th, you sent a letter to the Pentagon and the Justice Department saying the district is not requesting other federal law enforcement personnel and discourages any additional deployments without immediate notification and consultation with the police if such plans are underway. Do you think this letter played a role in the underreaction?
No, what I know is that the district prior to that had already requested federal support and had been granted it in the form of the DC National Guard. And the DC National Guard had been deployed and received its assignment. What we called, that letter calls attention to the federal government for other federal policing agencies and asked the federal government to coordinate with us if they were gonna be on DC streets. That letter has nothing to do with the Capitol or other federal facilities.
Did your police officers here expect the FBI and Homeland Security to warn them about this event? I mean, was there more federal warning that you expected to get that you did not?
I think that we always work hand in hand on these events, as we will on the inauguration, on gathering intelligence. Certainly we gather intelligence locally, but the FBI and the Department of Homeland Security have vast resources and the ability to keep us posted each and every day. I have asked the Department of Homeland Security, and will further discuss with the FBI how they can enhance those intelligence sharing activities with us directly.
Because before this event happened Wednesday, the leader of the Proud Boys was arrested almost immediately after he arrived here in Washington, and he had high capacity magazines on him. He landed here with weaponry. So was there no indication that there was something more than just a political rally being planned?
Well, certainly we were on the lookout for weapons, and we saw him with this magazine that could carry bullets, but we're always on the lookout for weapons. And in fact, the demonstration zone that we established prior to this event, we make clear to anyone in the mm-hmm. public that they okay. cannot carry weapons in those zones.
All right. Madam Mayor, good luck. Thank you for your time. We want to go now to Delaware Democratic Senator Chris Coons, who joins us from Wilmington. Good morning to you, Senator.
Good morning, Margaret.
Is the Capitol safe?
I pray and hope that it is. It is more urgent than ever that we flood the zone around the Capitol with federal resources to ensure the safe transfer of power to President-elect Biden and Vice President-elect Harris in 10 days. When virtually the entire Congress will be assembled again, and when these two next elected leaders of our nation will be inaugurated.
You're close to the president-elect, who tweeted yesterday, "Our president is not above the law. Justice serves the people. It doesn't protect the powerful." What is that supposed to mean? Does he support potentially prosecuting President Trump?
Well, Margaret, President-elect Biden is focused on the enormous challenges that will face him when he becomes president 10 days from now. It is up to Congress in the next 10 days to work to ensure the safety and security of our country, to press successfully, hopefully, for President Trump to resign or for Vice President Pence to enact what he can do under the 25th Amendment. President Trump, by his actions over the last 2 months since the election, has lost the right to be president. And by the actions this past Wednesday and his failure to take any responsibility or show any remorse for it of significance, I think he doesn't deserve to be president anymore.
Well, he won't be in 10 days, regardless of what happens. Should he be prosecuted after he leaves office? You sit on Senate Judiciary. Do you think that would be appropriate?
I think there needs to be accountability for his actions. Whether that comes through the New York Attorney General or the U.S. Department of Justice, we'll have to leave for now. But many of my Republican colleagues are now calling for healing and for us to come together. Yeah. I'll tell you that there can only be reconciliation with repentance. And I think the single most important thing that Republicans in Congress who helped facilitate this widespread conspiracy theory that somehow the election was stolen, and the most important thing that President Trump can do in these remaining 10 days is to stop those lies and to persuade their followers and supporters that President-elect Biden is the duly elected president of the United States. That's what Mike Pence certified on Wednesday night once we returned to the Capitol. That's what Senators Blunt and Klobuchar certified. That's an important next step if we are, in fact, going to have any healing.
You just heard Senator Blunt, who is in Republican leadership, decline to say if there'd be any sanction for the senators who stood on the floor even after the siege and continued protest the certification of the election. Should there be consequences for them?
I've called for them to resign. And Margaret, what I'll be looking for in the coming days and weeks is whether they take any accountability, whether they take any actions that will actually persuade some of their many voters and supporters and constituents that they know what they did was wrong. In the case of Missouri, Senator Blunt's home state and Senator Hawley's home state, the two major newspapers, former Senator Danforth, one of the major supporters of Senator Hawley, have all denounced him. The papers have called for him to resign. Right. And I think that's the sort of public indication that he's done something profoundly wrong here that should be followed by action from those in Congress who helped instigate this tragic event on Wednesday.
Would you vote to convict the president if the House does impeach him?
Yes.
And what would that serve? Because as you know, the argument against it from Republicans is that it would be further divisive to the country and that it would derail President-elect Biden's legislative agenda.
Look, I understand the concerns that just as President Biden takes over responsibility for leading our nation through this tragic pandemic, that we might be distracted by weeks in the Senate by a Senate trial. That's why I've called for President Trump to do the right thing finally and resign, or for Vice President Pence to secure the next 10 days through the 25th Amendment. Margaret, we have two pandemics raging through this country right now. One of them is this COVID-19 pandemic, and the other is a pandemic of division and distrust. The way to deal with them is by telling people the truth, that vaccines work, that we need good role models in terms of masking and social distancing, and that this was a free and fair election where Joe Biden was elected. We need folks who are willing to stand up and tell the truth in Congress.
Domestic terrorism is not technically a federal crime. The president-elect has called these attackers domestic terrorists. Should this be a federal crime?
Yes, and I'm encouraged that already 100 individuals have been arrested and charged with both state and federal offenses. Look, we narrowly avoided what could have been an even more tragic night when I saw the images of folks rioting through the Senate chamber with zip ties and with weapons, a crowd chanting, "Hang Mike Pence." That is truly chilling. This wasn't just a disruptive riot. This was an attempted coup, the most significant in the history of our republic, because the purpose of these rioters was to interrupt the certification of the vote that Joe Biden is the next president. This was an alarming and tragic event.
Senator, we're glad you're safe. We thank you for joining us today. Just ahead, two of the best in the business will be with us. Former Face the Nation moderators John Dickerson and Bob Schieffer both have some thoughts and analysis to share. We'll have that ahead on Face the Nation. We'll take a look at the role of social media and cybersecurity, and we'll talk with former FDA Commissioner Dr. Scott Gottlieb ahead.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome back to Face the Nation. For more context on some of the online discourse that fueled the assault on the Capitol, we want to go now to the former director of the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, Chris Krebs. Good to have you back with us.
Hey, good morning, Margaret.
The Wall Street Journal has reported that the FBI and Homeland Security never issued a threat assessment to local law enforcement here in D.C. about what happened on Wednesday ahead of time. Given that there were explicit online conversations about storming the Capitol, how is it possible that this was not a known threat?
So, you know, I'm sure that the ensuing investigation will get to the bottom of what happened. I think to a certain extent, we may have had some negative learning from the summer's protests and riots. And maybe there was an overreaction in the wrong way that led to some of the breakdowns here. But again, there's an investigation. But to be clear, you know, we, at least when I was there, we certainly anticipated physical violence as the ultimate manifestation of the president and the campaigns and his attorneys and his supporters' claims that the election was rigged or stolen. And, you know, those claims continue. The latest dog whistle is election irregularities. Mm-hmm. So those that are promoting these this narrative, these conspiracies, have to stop. They have to denounce these claims.
I mean, Homeland Security warned back in October that right-wing groups may use political rallies, and they actually pose a direct threat in terms of action. But then, during the Black Lives Matter protest this summer, you know, the Homeland Security Secretary was on this program and others touting the fact that the federal government could put federal agents in cities, whether mayors or governors wanted them there or not, that they had the power to do more. So, you know, why not do more if within the agency there were the threats that you just highlighted? Whose fault is that?
Again, the investigations, we'll get down to it, then, and particularly in the District of Columbia, the federal authorities on federal land, like the National Mall, like the Capitol grounds, have even greater authorities than they would in any American city. So clearly there was some sort of coordination and pre-planning breakdown. You know, what I would be thinking about right now is what happens on the 20th. Mm-hmm. What are the protections that are going to be in place. But there is an opportunity here, I think, to prevent further bloodshed. And I don't know if the president's capable of doing it, but he has to resign. He has to tell his supporters that he lied to them, that this was all his own fraud. He has to come out. We have to set an example for the rest of the free world that attempted coups, which is what this was, will not be tolerated. And there has to be an accountability. So whether it's a 25th Amendment push, whether it's an impeachment, the president needs to be held accountable for supporting and really inciting the activity of this past week.
And our reporting shows that he has no intention to do that, to resign. We know, though, that he does plan, and our CBS News team is reporting, he does plan to speak tomorrow. but we're told it's going to be to blast big tech for decisions like what Twitter just did to ban him. We also know Apple, Amazon, Google, they have blocked the Parler app, which has also been used as a forum to plan these kind of events. What is the impact of that?
Well, look, I think at this point, particularly after Wednesday, the president's legacy is a heap of ashes. There's nothing redeemable at this point, given the fact that he incited this attempt to overturn democracy, a fair and free election. There is an opportunity, though, for a redemption story. Again, he can resign. He can tell his supporters that it was all a big con and that he is sorry. I don't know if he's capable of doing it, but that's the best way to prevent further violence, to prevent further erosion of confidence in democracy over the next mm-hmm. 4 years. And every single Republican on the Hill that continues to support these election irregularities has to do the same thing. They have to denounce it and they have to come back to the middle.
And yet, on the issue of cyber and social media, which you've spent a lot of time thinking about, a lot of conservatives are speaking out, not against the president and his use of it, but against the idea that Twitter is censoring somehow conservative thought. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, who is likely to run in 2024, is out there tweeting this is un-American and a tactic of the left. Is this a free speech issue?
No, the First Amendment doesn't apply to private sector organizations. That's not how this works. That's government impeding speech in the ability to hear. And that's not what's happening here. These are companies that have their own ability to enforce their standards and their policies. I think there was a legitimate public policy interest over the last 4+ years of maintaining the president and his voice on Twitter and other platforms. But clearly what he has done has exceeded any reasonable public mm-hmm. policy interest. Now, the hard part is implementing these standards yeah. globally consistently. Other foreign leaders, for instance, they need to be consistent. They need to probably take similar action.
Understood. Chris Krebs, thank you for your time. We asked senior national correspondent Bob Schieffer to take a look at reaction to the last week's, Mark Strassman, to take a look at events around the country. Here's his report.
Vengeance is ours, saith the mob. And they're still saying.
I'm really glad it needed to happen.
Days after MAGA mania rampaged through an American sanctuary. Was the moment heroic or horrific? Partisans got in each other's face.
We all got to terror.
No, we're not.
But for some Trump loyalists, it's an inflection point.
You can be disappointed in whatever, but you can't just go in and ransack public places like that.
Count me out. Enough is enough.
You are a traitor, Lindsey Graham.
Trump diehards turned on Senator Lindsey Graham after that.
Welcome to the new America, Lindsey.
This is the rest of your life.
This video shows the first family Wednesday morning, right before the president's inflammatory speech.
I think we're T-minus a couple of seconds here, guys.
A couple hours later, the mob trampled the Constitution and Roseanne Boyland of Kennesaw, Georgia.
The president's words incited a riot that killed four of his biggest fans.
Protesters also stormed the Washington State Governor's Mansion. More protests in Arizona, Florida, Minnesota, and the Kansas State House. Talk of more violence now scuttles across social media. Our American ideal is still at risk. Democracy or ochlocracy? Rule by the mob. Mark Strassman, CBS News, Atlanta.
And we're joined now by our resident presidential historian, John Dickerson. Good morning. Thank you for coming in.
Morning, Margaret. Great to be with you.
You know, it was just 2 weeks ago, Gallup poll said that Donald Trump was the most popular man in America. And now we're talking about calls for his resignation, inciting an insurrection. I mean, does all of this end when he leaves office?
You know, the president's son and son-in-law said that it's no longer the Republican Party, it's Donald Trump's party. So I think of your question in two ways. What happens to Donald Trump and what happens to the political market he created that future Republican politicians are going to try to appeal to? After the election, the president said the election was stolen. Republican lawmakers knew that was a lie. They knew there was a cost to that lie. But because of the political market Donald Trump had created, what Donald Trump said was true was true. And those lawmakers worried about blowback. So instead of a healthy political market where facts, reason, and tradition operate, this was a market where facts were whatever you wanted to be. Persuasion didn't matter. Demonization mattered. So that fills up a rally crowd, right? Politically, it cost Republicans the presidency, the House, and the Senate. Governing-wise, the founders told us this was a terrible way to work, where you have the standard for the presidency to be just what the rally crowd likes. Mm-hmm. The standard should be the one Mitt Romney said, which is sometimes you honor your voters by telling them the truth. So what standard survives? Is there reflection about the choices that were made? Does somebody stand up now against lies? Or does the market that Donald Trump created exist? And if that's the case, then this insurrection was just an inconvenience, and that market exists, and Donald Trump will have a big role in that in the future.
There's still fear of that market.
Absolute fear. Absolute, even after, I mean, perhaps even more, given what happened on the 6th of January.
Well, right, because Republicans have seen the muscles that can be flexed.
Exactly.
When it comes to, I mean, some of the extraordinary things we heard and we saw this week, you know, the president has... Yes, he told people to go home, but then he said, we love you. You're patriots. He has not come out and said anything about the chance calling for his vice president to be executed, John.
You're exactly right, Margaret. This, to me, was, there are a lot of ways in which the president contributed to what happened on the 6th, but the example of what he was willing to trample in order to get his way is clearest in the grotesque treatment of his vice president. He says loyalty is the most important thing. No one has been more loyal to this president than Mike Pence. He has wagered his entire reputation defending the president. How was he repaid? The president said he could stop the count in Congress. He knew that to be a lie. When Mike Pence didn't do that because he couldn't do it, the president said he lacked courage. He put a target on the back of his vice president, and what happened? As sure as night follows day, those rioters said, hang Mike Pence. Hang Mike Pence. What gave them the idea that Mike Pence had done anything worthy of a hanging? Well, the president of the United States told them that, the person to whom Mike Pence was loyal. That's pretty low.
And he tweeted blasting Mike Pence while the siege was happening. And yet, we haven't heard a separation from the president. I mean, how do you put the genie back in the bottle at this point?
I don't think you do put the genie back in the bottle because that political market is still operating that I was right. talking about. People are still fearful. And, you know, we still have some number of days to go in which a lot of this free-floating anger is still out there. The president's still saying the election was stolen. Mm-hmm. And that gives energy to that free-floating anger.
All right. Well, he doesn't have a social media platform on which to propagate that now, which is why there's going to be so much more focus on if and when he finally speaks to us. We know he's planning a speech tomorrow and again Tuesday to make some public remarks. But, I mean, it's hard to find any kind of silver lining at the end of this week. But there are those who, I certainly notice how diplomats that I follow are trying to explain this to the rest of the world as they watch right. our beacon of democracy look pretty dim this week.
Yeah.
Have you found any hope here?
Well, when the U.S. Capitol is a crime scene, it's pretty hard to find hope. But hope is the power to be optimistic when times look desperate. And there was already a test of democracy before January 6th. It was to hold an election in the middle of a pandemic. Mm-hmm. And what happened? The country, Republicans and Democrats, turned out in record numbers. People stood in line. There was no violence. And the states changed all their voting procedures to accommodate this, and it succeeded. And they did recounts, and they were challenged. And those local officials did what is the central attribute of character. They did what they were supposed to do. They didn't do the easy or political thing. Pressure, pressure, pressure. They kept the faith. Then who else kept the faith? All the local officials in those states, then the courts. All of these challenges came. People with a political interest nevertheless did what their job told them to do, not what was politically expedient. The Department of Justice didn't go after the president's opponents as he would have liked them to do. The military kept their faith, not doing what the president would like them to do. And then Congress, after the grotesque experience on the 6th, nevertheless got together, held the vote, it took place. There is hope that can be accessed. What we need is a leader who can grab that hope, the stage is ready for them. Somebody has to step up.
John Dickerson, thank you.
Thanks, Mark.
For your thoughts. Good to have you here. In addition to the political turmoil in these final days of the Trump administration, vaccine distribution remains problematic. The CDC reports nearly 7 million first doses of the vaccine have been received. That's only 30% of the total distributed across the country. Meanwhile, infections continue to soar. Thursday was the deadliest day yet. Almost 4,200 people died from COVID-19. There have now been over 22 million cases, and more than 372,000 are dead. We want to go now to former FDA Commissioner Dr. Scott Gottlieb. He sits on the board of Pfizer and Illumina, a company that is working on sequencing some of the new virus variants. He joins us from Westport, Connecticut this morning. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
There are more people in this country hospitalized with COVID now than during the spring and summer combined. How much are these new strains from the UK, from South Africa, contributing to this surge?
Probably not a lot right now. We don't know for sure because we're not doing sequencing at a big enough scale like the UK is to really detect these variants. We're looking for the UK variant right now. But the method that we're using to try to detect the UK variant wouldn't necessarily spot the South African variant. So right now, we think the prevalence of the UK variant is about 0.2 to maybe 0.3% of infections, and that's based on data that Illumina has helped develop. With the South Africa variant, we don't think it's very prevalent here in the United States, but we could be missing more of those infections. So we don't think that these new variants right now are contributing to the surge of infection that we're seeing. We think this is a post-holiday bounce. But the bottom line is that we need a better system for detecting these things so we can have an adequate public health response.
And how resistant are they to current treatments?
Well, they appear more fit, meaning that they spread more easily, both of these variants. We've done some initial analysis with the UK variant, particularly with respect to the vaccines and the monoclonal antibodies, and the medical products that we have right now do appear to be effective against that UK variant. There's more concern around the South African variant because that variant has mutated the spike protein, the protein that's the target for our vaccines and our antibodies, in a way that could defeat at least the antibodies and perhaps make the vaccines less effective. We're going to have data on the vaccines in the next couple of weeks. Pfizer, the company I'm on the board of, is working on developing some of that data. So we'll have a better answer on that question. But it just goes to show you that these viruses are going to evolve. I mean, this virus has been running through the world, around the world, racing around the world, largely unchecked. It's been under some selective pressure with the widespread use, for example, of convalescent plasma. So it's inevitable that we're going to see these kinds of mutations in this virus. And this is probably going to be a constant struggle. We're going to have to update our vaccines and our antibody drugs and other therapeutics regularly to keep up with these new variants as they emerge.
The White House task force told some state governors this week that there may be a new American variant of this virus. Then the CDC said yesterday, basically, they're still trying to figure it out, and it could take weeks or months to identify. Is there something that is making this surge worse right now other than our own bad behavior?
Yeah. I don't think so, and the people I've spoken to don't think so. There is a variant in the U.S. that has become the predominant variant right now that's different than the original infection, but that's inevitable that you're going to see evolution in the strains that are circulating. There's no evidence to suggest that it's more fit, more transmissible, and we don't think this South African variant and the U.K. variant are very prevalent here right now. But the game has changed on the vaccine. To go back to the discussion you were having at the top of this this hit, we really need to get this vaccine out more quickly because this is really our only tool, our only backstop against the spread of these new variants. If we can get a lot of people vaccinated quickly, we might be able to get enough protective immunity into the population that this stops spreading at the rate that it is. So we need to acknowledge that it's not working. We need to hit the reset and adopt a new strategy in trying to get that out to patients.
I mean, there's only 10 days left to the Trump administration, but they started to acknowledge that the federal plan has some problems because they told states to maybe broaden out who they make the vaccine available to. The president-elect now says he's going to do what you've been talking about, which is release all available supply as soon as he takes office. But does releasing supply solve the problem here if it's really about uptake?
Well, it's a distribution issue right now. It will be a supply issue in 2 or 3 weeks, maybe if they can get the distribution right. Right now, there's 40 million doses sitting on a shelf somewhere. So the feds say it's with the states. The states say it's with the feds. It really doesn't matter to the patient who's not getting access to the injection. You have 40 million on the shelf. We have 50 million Americans above the age of 65. So we have supply to push it out to that population more aggressively. I think we need to take an all-of-the-above approach and push it out through different channels, including the big box stores, including federal sites that the Biden administration is talking about standing up. We need to try everything right now to create multiple distribution points. A lot of senior citizens aren't going to want to go to a stadium to get an inoculation. They're going to want to go to a pharmacy, a local pharmacy or a doctor's office. So we need to provide more opportunity for people to get a vaccination where they're comfortable getting it. But we do need to get these out more aggressively. Right now, you're right, it's a distribution issue. It will become a supply issue once we get the logistics down right. And we don't have that right now. We aren't doing a good job getting this to patients.
Was the siege of the Capitol this week potentially a super spreader event?
Of course. I mean, there's going to be chains of transmission that come out of that kind of mass gathering. And the crowd wasn't adhering to what we know of good practices in terms of mask wearing and other things. And I think they deliberately eschewed those things. So, yeah, we're going to see change of transmission come out of that kind of a gathering for sure.
We'll be watching it. Dr. Gottlieb, thank you for your time this morning. We'll be back in a moment.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than just a car. It's the two-door coupe that was there for your first drive. The hatchback that took you cross-country and back. And the minivan that tackles the weekly carpool. For the cars you couldn't live without, trust Amica Auto Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
During this administration, there has been no shortage of historic yet excruciatingly painful events. But even the most seasoned Washington veteran journalists were shocked by the attack on the Capitol, incited by our own president. As we worked on putting this broadcast together, we knew there was one voice we had to hear from, Bob Schieffer. And he joins us to reflect on the end of a volatile 4 years. Bob?
Margaret, America has never experienced anything like the Trump presidency. It is ending as it began, in chaos, controversy, and confusion. He told us America was broken and only he could fix it. His reign mirrored his own chaotic life. He lurched from one crisis to another, from financial windfalls to bankruptcies, from tabloid scandals to audacious lies. He introduced us to a bizarre cast of characters, from porn stars to the crackpots and clowns who inhabit the dark fringes of American politics. Some, like Rudy Giuliani, seemed to melt before our eyes as his hair dye trickled down his cheek during a news conference. Most he touched were diminished by the experience. Others who sought power by riding the back of the tiger wound up inside. He played down the pandemic and found kind words for Vladimir Putin and Kim Jong-un, but seemed determined to drive a wedge between America and our traditional allies. Yes, the stock market went up, but the nation's deficit and national debt ballooned to record levels. As we saw in those awful scenes unfolding in the Capitol, we came to understand that the man who had a manic desire for power had no real understanding of the power he possessed or what happens when it is misused. He will be gone soon, but he showed us America was not broken. He was.
Bob, thank you for sharing your thoughts. It's so good to have you here.
Thank you, Mark.
We'll be right back.
We all have busy lives these days, and we don't want to waste a day recovering after a night out. That's why ZBiotics is the answer we've all been looking for. Their probiotic was invented by PhD scientists to tackle rough mornings after drinking. Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut. It's this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for your rough next day. Pre-alcohol produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down. This is a proactive solution that wards off feeling miserable the next day instead of a reactive approach like drinking electrolytes or eating greasy food. Enhance your mornings with ZBiotics. Go to ZBiotics.com/CBS to get 15% off your first order when you use code CBS at checkout. ZBiotics is backed with a 100% money-back guarantee. So if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money. No questions asked. Remember to head to ZBiotics.com/CBS and use the code CBS at checkout for 15% off. Thank you, ZBiotics, for sponsoring this episode and our good times.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
At the end of a tough week, we want to say thank you to the journalists who covered the historic and horrific events. And thank you to the first responders who rushed to protect them, lawmakers, and everyone at the Capitol. Thank you all for watching. Until next week, for Face the Nation, I'm Margaret Brennan. Today's guests were District of Columbia Mayor Muriel Bowser, Missouri Republican Senator Roy Blunt, Delaware Democratic Senator Chris Coons, former Director of the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency Chris Krebs, and former FDA Commissioner Dr. Scott Gottlieb. The executive producer of Face the Nation is Mary Hager. This broadcast was directed by Shelley Schwartz. Face the Nation originates from CBS News in Washington. For more Face the Nation, we're online at facethenation.com, and you can follow Face the Nation and CBS Radio News on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Face the Nation is also broadcast on our digital network, CBSN.
If you like Face the Nation with Margaret Brennan, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Are you ready for an all-new season of Survivor? You better be, because Survivor 46 is here, and it's 90 minutes of twists and turns you don't want to miss. Better yet, after each episode, there's a brand new episode of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. Each week, we go behind the scenes of the episode's biggest moments, taking you into the how and the why things happened. And this season, we're very lucky to be joined by an expert, the winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares.
What is up? I'm thrilled to be joining this team and to be giving you my take on how and the why players made the moves they did, what it takes to outwit, outplay, and outlast, and to ask Jeff some questions, because even after 26 days out there, there is still a lot for me to uncover.
Bring it, D. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcast.
The Hargan women seem to have it all.
From the outside looking in, we were blessed. My mom was amazing.
But as detectives would soon learn, there was a lot going on inside the Hargan household.
Ashley and I have been calling my mom and the house and Helen. Okay. No one's answering.
63-year-old Pamela Hargan gunned down in her own home. Her youngest daughter, Helen, lay dead upstairs.
Patrol, when they arrived, assumed or thought that there might have been a murder-suicide.
But for the detectives on the scene,
there were things about the scene itself that were concerning to us on day one.
Who would want to kill their mother and their little sister?
There is no boogeyman here. It is exactly who we think it is.
I'm Peter Van Sant from 48 Hours. This is Blood is Thicker, the Hargan Family Killings. Listen to Blood is Thicker, the Hargan Family Killings, starting May 8th, wherever you get your podcasts.